Coachman stirred as the voices descended through the clouds, and then four figures were standing a little way off. He clambered down and with difficulty opened the coach door as they approached.
"Most of the wretched things got away, though," said Mother.
"Never mind, my dear," said Father.
"I really hate them. Are they a dead end, too?" said Daughter.
"Not quite dead enough as yet, despite your valiant efforts. Igor, on to L'Ancre." The coachman turned.
"Yes, master."
"Oh, for the last time, man, is that any way to talk?"
"It's the only way I know, master," said Igor.
"And I told you to take the plumes off the coach, you idiot." The coachman shifted uneasily.
"Gotta have black plumes, master. It's traditional."
"Remove them at once," Mother commanded. "What will people think?"
"Yes, mistress."
The one addressed as Igor slammed the door and lurched back around to the horse. He removed the plumes reverentially and placed them under his seat. Inside the coach, the vexed one said,
"Is Igor an evolutionary dead end too, Father?"
"We can but hope, dear."
"Thud," said Igor to himself as he picked up the reins.
The wording began, "You are cordially invited," and was in that posh, runny writing that was hard to read but ever so official. Nanny Ogg grinned and tucked the card back on the mantelpiece. She liked the idea of cordially. It had a rich, a thick, and above all, an alcoholic sound. She was ironing her best petticoat. That is to say, she was sitting in her chair by the fire, while one of her daughters-in-law, whose name she couldn't remember just at this moment, was doing the actual work. Nanny was helping by pointing out the bits she'd missed. It was a damn good invite, she thought, especially the gold edging, which was as thick as syrup. Probably not real gold, but impressively glittery all the same.
"There's a bit there that could do with going over again, girl," she said, topping up her beer.
"Yes, Nanny."
Another daughter-in-law, whose name she'd certainly be able to recall after a few seconds' thought, was buffing up Nanny's red boots. A third was very carefully dabbing the lint off Nanny's best pointy hat on its stand. Nanny got up again and wandered over to the open back door. There was little light left in the sky now, and a few rags of cloud were scudding over the early stars. She sniffed the air. Winter hung on late up here in the mountains, but there was definitely a taste of spring on the wind. A good time, she thought. Best time, really. Oh, she knew that the year started on Hogswatch night, when the cold tide turned, but the new year started now, with green shoots boring upwards through the last of the snow. Change was in the air, she could feel it in her bones. Of course, her friend Granny Weatherwax always said you couldn't trust bones, but Granny Weatherwax said a lot of things like that all the time. Nanny Ogg closed the door. In the trees at the end of her garden, leafless and scratchy against the sky, something rustled its wings and chattered as a veil of dark crossed the world. In her own cottage, a few miles away, the witch Agnes Knit was in two minds about her new pointy hat. Agnes was generally in two minds about anything. As she tucked in her hair and observed herself critically in the mirror, she sang a song. She sang in harmony. Not, of course, with her reflection in the glass, because that kind of heroine will sooner or later end up singing a duet with Mr. Bluebird and other forest creatures, and then there's nothing for it but a flamethrower. She simply sang in harmony with herself. Unless she concentrated, it was happening more and more these days. Perdita had a rather reedy voice, but she insisted on joining in. Those who are inclined to casual cruelty say that inside a fat girl is a thin girl and a lot of chocolate. Agnes's thin girl was Perdita. She wasn't sure how she'd acquired the invisible passenger. Her mother had told her that when she was small, she'd been in the habit of blaming accidents and mysteries, such as the disappearance of a bowl of cream or the breaking of a prize jug, on the other little girl. Only now did she realise that indulging this sort of thing wasn't a good idea when, despite yourself, you've got a bit of natural witchcraft in your blood. The imaginary friend had simply grown up and had never gone away and had turned out to be a pain. Agnes disliked Perdita, who was vain, selfish, and vicious, and Perdita hated going around inside Agnes, whom she regarded as a fat, pathetic, weak-willed blob that people would walk all over were she not so steep. Agnes told herself she'd simply invented the name Perdita as some convenient label for all those thoughts and desires she knew she shouldn't have, as a name for that troublesome little commentator that lives on everyone's shoulder and sneers. But sometimes